What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Mind the Mental Podcast. Here we go again with more G1 Climax action to talk about. We're going to start off with the action from, basically I kind of gave you a great lineup of what will be coming on the 25th, 26th, and 27th. So this is obviously the 25th show review, night 7 overall. And, the first match at Currican Hall was what a match this was, by the way. It was Will Ospreay taking on the great Okan. You know, Okan is basically, really, honestly, I think on New Japan website, they wrote he's facing a crisis of confidence. And that's a great way to explain what's going on, because he's not only not been winning, but, he hasn't even been speaking in his post-match, or he didn't say much in the pre-match or the pre-tournament comments at the press conference. He didn't have much to say, and after this match it was no comment once again, even though he did admit that he has a lot that he would like to say, but he didn't say anything. So again, maybe it is his confidence that's been hit as of recent times, and you can tell so far in this tournament that that's been the case. But Ospreay, man, he is all, he wanted everything Okan had to offer, and I still think he was surprised, and I think they also mentioned he was surprised to see the direction this match went in. Okan, would shove the referee, he used chairs, he used mist in the face, like taking all of us off guard, especially, again, I think I mentioned in the first match, I was like, I don't think Okan is going to win because it's an opening match. So again, I'm thinking it's going to be one of those matches that is not as dramatic and all that, but man, this was fast-paced. It was dramatic the entire time. So kudos to those guys for starting everything off hot. Currican was loving it, because even though I think we all were shocked the lengths that the great Okan went. Although Ospreay after the match did not take this personal. Of course, Ospreay showing his athleticism with a moonsault press. Okan shocked Ospreay with a moonsault press. And what happened was he still couldn't put him away, which was the common theme of this match. No matter how good Okan was, just not good enough to put Ospreay away, keep him down. Hook kicks, eventually changed the match, and then the Oz cutter, of course. And then he hit the leap of faith, finally, in a final flurry that kind of helped him get back on his feet. So, it was a very, very interesting concept. And I'll talk about next who Ospreay's opponent would be. I'll talk about later who Ospreay's next opponent will be. But it definitely will be a fantastic match. I think I don't even have to hide that fact. I think we know it's going to be the main event, and you'll be able to understand exactly what I'm talking about in a second. But next, I'm going to talk about Kenta versus Tai Chi. He caught him napping, man. Honestly, it was just one of those things that honestly even caught me by surprise. I was expecting a more dramatic contest. But Kenta, when he wins so far in this tournament, that's just how he's been able to do it. He's been able to use veteran presence of mind that he has, because he's just been on top for a long time in Japan. And, again, lulling you into a false sense of security. They both had title belts at the beginning. Even Kenta even played, danced a little bit to Tai Chi's music. And I loved the little duet. I loved it. Even though you didn't hear either one of them sing. But I guess, to be fair, you don't usually hear Tai Chi sing. But Tai Chi has a wonderful voice. Don't get me wrong. He has a wonderful voice. Honestly, though, he hit him with the O'Connor roll to win, surprising everyone. Of course, making sure the referee was out of place. And, a shot with the belt, and then a low blow and a roll-up. And then it was over with, what I'm saying? So, again, Tai Chi went for the O'Connor roll pin. Sorry. Again, mixing up notes here. But, again, honestly, it was a really, really competitive match, even though it didn't last. I wouldn't say really, really competitive match. Let me stop saying that so much. It looked like it was going to become a competitive match, but again, it was done out of nowhere after the trickery from Kenta with pushing the referee, getting a low blow. Again, not to the extent that Evil goes, not the exact same formula, but definitely dirty and definitely a weak move, I guess you would say, if you think about what we're used to, especially when you talk about what Okan and Ospreay was able to do in their contest. And then the other B-block match of the day was Tangaloa versus El Fantasmo. And, you know, again, both guys have really struggled so far in the tournament. But, you know, this is really, really a tough match for ELP. I thought that he's probably gonna go down and lose another one. But, you know, he really hung in there, just showed his toughness, fighting the bigger man, and you know, he's flashing that talent that I talk about all the time. ELP is probably my favorite wrestler to watch in New Japan on a match-by-match basis. Next, of course, are guys like Ospreay, and, you know, every Okada match is an experience. So, you know, it's in Naito, of course. But, you know, just from a move-by-move standpoint, if we're just talking about moves and what they do, ELP is awesome. But, again, the planches that he does, you know, off the stage, outside, that was awesome. And, you know, again, I do think that Loa looked really good here. Tangaloa was much better, you know, than he looked. He wasn't stealing the knee as much in this match. Seemed like he's gotten past that, or at least ELP didn't work it as much. And, you know, it was a jackhammer. You know, I love when Tangaloa starts to borrow a little. He does a spear and a jackhammer. So, he definitely borrows from Goldberg. I don't know if Goldberg was a fan. Well, he was a fan of Goldberg growing up, but he definitely took his move. And man, the super power bomb off the top rope when ELP went for that super Frankensteiner was insane. And honestly, I really thought that this was going to be, you know, a victory for Tangaloa the way it started up. He even had him up for ape shit. It seemed like he wanted to run with it. But at the last minute, ELP pulled out a crucifix, another crucifix pin, taking advantage of Tangaloa. I don't think he has a neck injury, but he obviously has neck problems because he cannot get his weight back on his side once they get him in that crucifix pin. He lost a match to Yoshihashi, very same way. So it was an interesting way for things to be done, but I thought it was a good way for ELP to finally get on the board because this was really, really a tough tournament so far for ELP, and it was good for him to finally get a victory. And, you know, Tangaloa, even though he loses here, he looked really good in defeat, looked like he really should have won. So, honestly, they save face here. I think it was a pretty good segment. And to get done with B-Block, and before I head over to A-Block, we're going to talk about the headline match of B-Block, which is Yoshihashi. And, man, was I rooting for Yoshihashi. I'm sorry. I know Okada is that guy, and I think that's part of it. He's such a final boss at this point in his career that everyone, so when you have someone like a Yoshihashi who's lost, like, I think he's like 13-0 coming in, 13, he's 0-13 against Okada coming into this match, and Okada's 13-0 against him. When you have odds like that, man, you have to root for the underdog, especially as hard as Yoshihashi always fights. But, man, by the way, Okada was a dick. Like, I know they're friends and all, and, you know, I don't know if I could be friends with a guy who kind of did a little bit, some of the stuff that Okada did, but honestly, I think by this point we get it. He wanted to fire up Yoshihashi, get what he got out of Yoshihashi, and boy, did he get that fight out of Yoshihashi, man. You know, Yoshihashi chops DDT on the floor from Okada, of course, setting the tone as he always does. And, you know, but he screamed at times at Yoshihashi to step up and bring the fight. And but again, Yoshihashi sunset flip landed a tremendous power bomb out of the corner. You know, and then the Kamigoroshi for a near two. Then he showed Okada the impact of his offense, you know, at times, you know, hitting the Rainmaker, honestly, you know, out of a reversal, which was one of the best spots of the match. But seemed like Okada was going to hit him with one, but he hit him with a Rainmaker. And it really felt like Yoshihashi had it won. Kept going for karma, but Okada, a little too smart, would not let him hit his finisher. But Yoshihashi made an unforced error when he jumped on Okada's shoulders because he kept reversing the landslide. He kept reversing he got hit with the landslide, but he reversed the Rainmaker. And then it was time. Okada was going for it again, and he would reverse it again. So, again, it seemed like Yoshihashi was avoiding the Rainmaker at all costs, but he screwed up, jumped on Okada's shoulder, went for the crucifix. Went for easy pickings, as I think he dubbed it, that he beat Tangaloa with, and Okada did not go for it at all. He jumped on Okada's shoulders. Okada turned that into the Cobra Flosion, which is kind of his version of the Emerald Flosion, kind of mixing with a nice name mixed with Inoki's. You know, Cobra Twist kind of, I see the connection there. Or maybe he's calling it Cobra Flojan for another reason. Don't want to be wrong. The point is, that unforced error by Yoshihashi cost him this match. Of course, when you hit Cobra Flojan, the Rainmaker is right behind it. And you can't get up from that one. And Okada's still undefeated. So quickly, I want to run through B-Block's point totals. We have Okada, of course, at 8 points. Yoshihashi started off strong, but now he's at 4 points. You have 2 points for Tangaloa, 2 points for El Phantasmo, 4 points for Tai Chi. The only person that is in striking distance right now is Will Ospreay. Even though Tai Chi did get that victory over Will, yes, Tai Chi versus, Tai Chi still at 4 points now after losing to Kenta, and Ospreay is the only one in striking distance. So really at this point, we just need either Ospreay to take him out or whoever gets a shot at Okada at this point has to take him out. But anyway, Okan still at 2 points. And that, like I said, I mentioned that I was going to talk about what's next. I'm going to talk about that in a second. And lastly but not least, we got Great Okan with 2 and Kenta with 4 points. So, next action on Thursday, like I said, the ninth night of the show, we will get Kenta and Tangaloa. No, Kenta versus El Phantasmo. Tangaloa will take on the Great Okan. Yoshihashi will meet Tai Chi with a good little 4-point battle right there. And then we get Will Ospreay versus Kazuchika Okada. So, we'll see. Again, that's the main event on Thursday. I'm pretty sure they're going to tear the house down. Everyone else in the block, if they want a shot, has to be rooting for Ospreay. And if Ospreay don't win, I mean, what else can you do? Okada already at 10 points. I think he's going to take this block. But we'll see what happens. Now, I go to A-Block, and honestly, man, A-Block was really interesting from the beginning. I mean, to start off with Shota Umino and Gabriel Kidd, you know, it was a really cool match, you know, and it was a fight, because Shota couldn't even make his entrance, and Gabe has continued to do what he's been doing this entire tournament, and that is cause hell to anyone he's fighting. You know, raise hell in the entire arena. You know, in this particular case, it worked perfectly because Shota never comes through the right entrance. He comes through the side gate, and that really did not bode well for him in this one, or at least at the beginning. And honestly, you know, the crowd was really, really not, but they were not into what Gabe was doing. They didn't like it. I'm not saying that they weren't into the match. They loved the match eventually, of course, but you know, Gabe was in such a commanding lead at the beginning, and he had that pace. You know, he was insulting the fans. So it was a great way of pissing off everybody. There's one thing Gabriel has shown me he's good at. That is being pissed off and pissing off everybody. So, you know, I think that's great signs for a young heel. He has a very bright future in this business, Gabriel does. He's like a veteran for someone who hasn't been around in Japan that long. I know he's been wrestling over 10 years. You can tell, man, he has the presence of someone who knows what the hell they're doing. But again, Umino fought back. You know, he did the ignition, the nice neck breaker. You know, of course, Gabriel Kidd staying dirty with a low blow attempts. And he also almost tried to put him in the hospital after biting his way from a suplex attempt. And then he used the hangman's choke from the top rope. So, you know, again, trying to injure Umino, but Umino was too much. He was just not gonna be defeated here. He's tired of coming close to winning, tired of ties, tired of not getting the job done. So Shota Umino finally gets 2 points, and he talked about it after the match. He fought his ass off for 2 points. I really enjoyed this match, man. Again, to follow basically what happened in that opener and be kind of hit immediately with a nice brawl slash solid match. And again, like I said, Gabriel Kidd has a very bright future. You can just tell with what he has to do. And I think at this point, everyone knows that Shota is going to be the next big thing in New Japan. So speaking of next big things in New Japan, Yota Tsuji versus Chase Owens. Yota Tsuji is also a guy who has a very, very bright future. But Chase Owens is a veteran. Again, another Bullet Club veteran. He's been here much longer than Gabriel Kidd also. And you can see that earlier. He's a step ahead of Yota Tsuji throughout the match. And, you know, only having 1 point to his name at this point, you can tell that Tsuji was getting frustrated as Owens was, you know, doing a good job of beating him down. It was a spectacular move here and there, and an angry boot to the face after, you know, Tsuji kind of started to make his comeback. But again, you know, Tsuji, every time he got started, it'd be something like a thumb to the eye or something from Chase Owens. You know, again, being a veteran, being smart. And, you know, he couldn't really get things going for long, but the crowd definitely wanted Yota to get the win here. And they kind of knew that if he hit what he wanted to, it was going to be it. And that's basically what happened. A curb and then a spear, a curb stomp and a spear, which I've not lost on me that Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns' move or, you know, his nice little finishing combination. Don't blame him. But anyway, yeah, that's it. Yota Tsuji finally gets his win. Finally gets a win, not only in the G1, but his first win post excursion, and it was a solid contest to get us there. Again, after going on 3, let's just go right into this. You know, Hikuleo needed to win. Let's just talk about that night against Ren Narita here, and you know, Narita also needed these points after he's kind of struggled, and you know, the type of up and down tournament. Like, he's had great matches, very competitive, but hasn't been able to do what he wanted to do in the, as far as the point totals goes either. But again, it was this. The story of this match is Hikuleo is huge, and there's nothing Ren Narita can do about it, man. You know, Narita tried his best. He tried to hold on to his legs, tried to work the arm. You know. He did. He tried to do a Boston Crab. Did not matter because he could lay his arms too long. He just grabbed the ropes easily. He also didn't stay in the arm breaker long whatsoever. So again, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of things that Shelter tried, including his guillotine knee, but Hikuleo was just there. He was just too big and just too strong. And, of course, once he got hit with the godsend, the choke slam, it was pretty much it. Again, the big story there for Ren Narita is even though he could not win, you know, it just felt like it was nothing he could do with a guy like Hikuleo. And I thought we'd see more of that in this tournament, so I was happy that Hikuleo finally got on the board, even if some people may not be happy that Ren Narita couldn't get it done. But it's one of those situations where it's totally believable. I mean, it looked totally believable. Again, this match right here, man, the main event, Kaito Kiyomiya, man, versus Sonata. You could just tell, man, the crowd was really into this one. Really wanted to know how this would go. And I really respect New Japan and the way they displayed Kaito in this match, because they did not try to bury one of Noah's brightest stars for the future and former champion. They wanted Kaito to look like he was just that damn good just as good as Sonata. And, you know, again, it was really a cool match. You know, they were kind of, you know, attempting shining wizards at each other. They were working at a breakneck pace. You know, it was a smart match because Kaito would work Sonata's leg, hit him with the figure four for a nice dramatic struggle for the ropes, you know what I mean? And honestly, the time started to tick down there, and that sprint towards the end, that whole entire last 5 minutes, was just unbelievable to me, man. We saw a modified Tiger Driver. Sonata hit the rolling elbow, and he hit a beautiful drop kick. And, you know, and he hit a Tiger Driver of himself. You know, so again, they were kind of going back and forth here. And Sonata tried to hit Deadfall, could not get it, and you know, but Kiyomiya would attack his knee. And then Sonata went for his moonsault, but then he missed, and then he re-aggravated the knee himself. Tiger suplex after that from Kiyomiya. And, you know, again, it was just an awesome set of counters towards the end there. I think within the last 30 seconds, they were doing O'Connor rolls to each other. And, you know, Kaito looked like he had it won, honestly, but then right out of those roll-ups, Sonata hit with the Flash Shining Wizard, hit him with it, 1, 2, 3, with literally 2 seconds left on the clock, almost a time limit draw. So again, putting over the world champion or former world champion from Noah over in a tremendous way, while at the same time remaining or keeping their world champion on top. You know, again, just so smart. I can't say enough about how beautiful that match was put together. So again, lastly, I want to go ahead and run through A block. We have 8 points. Sonata, also undefeated, he's at the top of the A block. You got Shota Umino at 4 points. Even, you know, after picking up his first win, he's at 4 points. That's what happens when you kind of, you know, you get some draws in and you do your it works out in your favor, kind of. He looks like he's in the well within the block. You got Renderita, though. He's only at 2 points. Struggling, you know what I'm saying? Not being able to be in the forefront. As a matter of fact, he is in last place with Hikuleo, who just beat him. You got Yoda Tsuji at 3. Of course, another person with the victim of draws. Finally got his first win, but at 3 points. And so he's right behind that little barricade at 4 that we have with Chase Owens, Gabe Kidd, Shota Umino. And then you have Kaito at 5 points now after falling to Sonata. So again, Sonata and Okada at the top of their blocks right now. And we just saw Kaito, the person who's even close to Sonata. We seen what he did with his shot. Did not work out. So, man, keep your eye out on the A block and B block. I will try to, by the end of this podcast, I will have enough content, hopefully, that I will include the 27th, the Thursday show, on here. So we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, man, this is a very exciting tournament so far. As we move on now to the C block and July 26th, we're going to go ahead and just talk about what happened here. To kick things off, we basically started with another tainted win for Evil over Hanare in this situation. Of course, Dick Togo set a trap, as always. You know, they attacked Hanare, he attacked Hanare in the entrance, basically setting Evil up to kind of have control. And, you know, but at the end of the day, it was cool to see Hanare rang Evil's head on the West seating sign leveled, you know, and he beat up both guys, you know, with a double lariat in the crowd. It was a nice little brawl there. But of course, like I mentioned, you know, House of Torture and what they do, it's hard to stop, especially since New Japan tend to book them similarly. Even after he missed his finish, I think the Rampage is what he was going for. That's not the Streets of Rage. He's going for basically a signature, the Rampage. But you know, Dick Togo got in the ring with a chair, only for Hanare to punch straight through it, which by the way was a nice spot. But a low blow, Evil. Everything is Evil, of course, and there we are. You know. Another tainted victory for Evil, doing what he does best at this point, and that is screw over. Doesn't matter if you're babyface, faction members, another heel. Doesn't matter who you are. At this point, when you fight Evil, you know you're fighting Dick Togo too. So at this point, I don't even know. It's hard. I think once you win like that for so long, after a while, it's like, oh, it doesn't make the babyface look too dumb, I guess, especially if you think about how New Japan books things. But yeah, it definitely makes the ones who can't overcome his tactics look kind of crazy, because it's like, I know you knew it was coming. So, you know, but it is what it is. That's the result. Mikey Nichols and Shingo, man, they had a really good hard-hitting fight. You know, they had a similar style in this match, where it seemed like Mikey, in my opinion, really showed what he could do. Again, I get to talking about TMDK, especially on this night. They had a really strong night, in my opinion, and we'll talk about more of that in a second. But you know, they did their sliding lariats. Both of them was basically trying for it. You know, Shingo finally hit a lariat out of nowhere at some point, but then Nichols, you know, did a nice suplex, a delayed suplex, and it seemed to really hurt Shingo's neck at the time. And again, neither guys was trying to give up anything. You know, they were throwing strikes intensely. Takagi was chest was red, you know what I mean? Mikey Nichols was bleeding again because of headbutts, because that's just what he does at this point. Again, showing that toughness, that strong style, and just how good he is in a one-on-one format. I think, you know, that's basically what I got from this, especially when he's going against or going toe-to-toe with a guy like Takagi. And again, he just kind of lunged himself at him at some point towards the end there, and just kind of stayed on top of him for a pin. It wasn't the prettiest type of thing. I thought it was a lariat at first, but it just kind of looked like he just jumped on him, man, and just kept him down. But it did tell the story of them just beating the hell out of each other, and you know, him being like, okay, Shingo had to just pin his shoulders down and keep him down, make sure that he won this match and escaped basically with 2 points, because it was looking rough here in a tough battle with Mad Mikey Nichols. I really liked that match. I thought it was cool, very physical. Mikey again had a really good showcase there. And I'm always impressed when guys who I see primarily at the moment in tag teams, and then they do their own thing by themselves against someone who's like Shingo, former champion, you know, and someone who's established themselves by themselves. To see him go in there and just take it to Shingo, it was really cool to watch. Kirk and Hall, man, the crowd was really happy. Really, really happy in this match. You know what I'm saying? With this next one, when I'm talking about Eddie Kingston and Ishii's match. I mean, it was just a war. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could tell Kirk and Hall was really into it. Eddie Kingston, by the way, I just love how sacred everything is to him in New Japan or just in Japanese pro wrestling. You could tell how important this was to him. You know, even though he was selling a back injury and had a kind of limp. I think the limp probably is connected to his back. But he had that going on, and it didn't really matter, man. They filled each other out, but then they just started to really, you know, go at it after a while with chops and, you know, strikes. And, of course, you know, eventually we got lariats out of it. And just a really strong wrestling match. Great, you know, great back and forth between two guys who just are really, really tough. You know, Kingston's worst enemy in this match was his hurt lower back, and it just did not really cooperate with him, is a great way to put it. Kingston's offense would, you know, again, after he would always kind of be fighting through something to get his offense off, but it was still effective. Again, you could just tell that, you know, since he was in a place like Hurricane Hall, he had to do what he just had to perform, and that's basically what we got out of it. I just really recommend people go watch it, because I can't even really do it justice with a good breakdown, because none of the moves that they were doing were anything. It wasn't like, you know, of course you wouldn't get any flippy stuff when we talk about who we're talking about here, but it wasn't any like crazy move spots that you could think about. It was just a lot of great striking. You know, fundamental wrestling, you know, very good, strong style, pure soul is the way I would describe it. You know, you got German suplexes, a nice backdrop suplex at some point. But again, Ishii was at times, he was reeling, but he was never completely out of it. And again, it was just a war. I think that's the best way to describe this. Neither guy gave an inch. Neither guy gave in to lariats at some point. But out of nowhere, not really out of nowhere, but finally Ishii broke him down enough to get that vertical brain buster off. And Ishii gets his points on the board, finally, you know, getting on the board. But just a big-time victory. And then at the end of the day, even if you wanted Eddie Kingston to win, you cannot complain with the result here, because this really, you can't be mad at it, because you just come away from it so impressed with what it. Not only me personally, I heard rumors that this might be Ishii's last G1, or like Ishii is slowing down. It's just like, I don't think he's slowing down from an in-ring standpoint at all. I think maybe we know his style is so physical, so maybe we can all tell that maybe it's a time for him to slow down. We're going to talk about Tanahashi. I saw some people hint that maybe it's time for Tana to relax or retire or slow down, which seems kind of extreme, but I get it, because it's just like he can't even get to the top rope at the same to do the high fly flow the same way he used to. It's just, I don't know if he's selling it a little bit more, but you can just tell the lift, the explosiveness. His knees may be still bothering him to an extent. And after all the years, all the wear and tear, it makes sense. But again, to get back to Ishii, in my opinion, don't have that. You know, somehow he's still able to have these incredible strong style physical contests and, you know, maintain his health for the most part that we know of. So, yeah, man, it's been great to watch. He's such a joy to watch. So if this is his last G1, even though he isn't performing well, if you're going off points or whatever, the matches are always, for the most part, bangers. And that's just what Ishii does. Eddie Kingston, I think, earned respect of a lot of fans with the way he's been fighting in this tournament, but especially with this match here. Next and last for C-Block, the headline of C-Block was Tama Tonga, David Finlay. Like I said, you know, honestly, the 2 points here took a back seat, really. You know, because this was all about revenge for Tama. You know, of course you want 2 points. This is a G1. Of course it's important. But Finlay did just injure him 2 months ago. You know, and so you already know, early in the match, Tom was all about revenge, and I think Finlay took advantage of that. He took advantage of that heat and all of that Tom obviously wanted to get back in this situation. And Finlay was smart for the most part, you know, after making Tom tweak his knee, after pushing him off the I guess you could say it was like the stage, but it really was out of the bleachers of the crowd and kind of pushed him down. But again, once Finlay was in control, it was, you know, again, nothing Tom really could do for a while there because, you know, Finlay went back to doing what he does, you know. And that's being aggressive and, you know, taking away, you know, working the leg that Tama Tonga injured. But after a while, Tama finally hit the Supreme Flow, but again, he went for the Supreme Flow, but again, Finlay was one step ahead with the knees up to the gut. He hit him with a sharpshooter. And again, it was a lot of, you know, again, knee damage. You could just tell Tama was selling that knee. But again, he was determined. This is where Finlay screwed himself. You know, he was really determined to make sure he powerbombed Tama again and make sure he took him out and put him the same thing he put him on the injured list with. But again, that last surge of adrenaline from Tama really set him up perfectly as he, you know, I think he hit a Hurricane Rana, secured the three. And it was a shocked little finish. But of course, at the end, to get his heat back, Finlay did drop him with the shillelagh. So, yeah, man, it was a really fun match, honestly, if you think about the story they were telling. Probably wasn't the best of the G1 or anything like that, but purely from a story standpoint, it was definitely very entertaining. And it was cool to see Tama Tonga still pull out the win, even though, again, right now, Finlay is the leader of the War Dogs, leader of the Bullet Club, you know. So he kind of had to reestablish that, no, I'm still the baddest man here, even though I lost. But that might come back to bite Finlay, man. After being dominant for the most part, that loss right there really is gonna hurt because again, Tama Tonga don't have the tiebreaker on Evil because they're all tied at six. It'd be Evil, David Finlay, and Tama right now. But he does have a victory over Dave Finlay, and Finlay has a victory over Evil. So you can kind of see where we at there, tied at six. We'll see how that goes on Sunday, what's going to happen next. And then you have Tomohiro Ishii at 2 points finally, like I mentioned. Shingo at 4 points. Mikey at two. Hanari at two. And Eddie Kingston at 4 points. So, again, on Sunday, Hanari is going to face David Finlay. So, we'll see if Hanari can get more points or will Finlay continue on at the top of the block. Eddie Kingston against Mikey Nichols should be very physical. Evil versus Ishii is going to be a very important match. I'm assuming Evil probably will continue to screw people, but we'll see how it goes. And then I think Shingo Takagi versus Tama Tonga is going to be a very interesting match to see how that turned out because we know Shingo needs the points. And honestly, if they all stay at six, Shingo can creep himself back into position somehow. So even after that rough start he had, we'll see what happens though. As C Block continues on. Now on to D Block. We have to talk about what happened on the 26th for D Block. Starting off the action of the whole entire night, I believe, right? I think this is the second match. I think Evil and Canary went first, and this is the second match. So, Goto versus Alex Coffin, like again. Goto this time couldn't even hide it with the tape. Like I told you guys on the last show, he's definitely working through an injury here, and you know, again, it was a really tough one at times for Goto to get through it, but he wrestled a lot longer here. But Coughlin was immediately on the offense, and of course, he did hit him with a chair at some point. And Goto was struggling to draw breath, and it was just you could tell he wanted to come back, but he went for a GTR, and unfortunately, that was turned into a jackhammer that Coughlin used to get the victory. So Coughlin did exactly what he wanted to in that one. Again, it was tough match for Goto, and it's going to be tough the rest of the tournament for Goto, like I said, fighting through that injury. But a big win for Coughlin. Again, these War Dogs continuing to prove themselves and, you know, show you what makes them special. And I think getting a win over a guy like Goto, even if it may not end up meaning much this year, it'll definitely mean something for the future of Coughlin in this tournament, hopefully. So, again, Hiroshi Tanahashi over fighting his friend, fighting his partner. Are they currently partners? I don't know. But either way it goes, they're definitely friends. That's the story I was getting here with Toriano. And they have teamed up recently, so I guess this may be his most recent partner in Japan, other than the few times he teamed up with Okada. Even though they were rivals in the past, you know, Yano, and they become friends, Yano still wanted to make sure he cheated Tanahashi, as always. Again, you know how these matches go. The ace, one step ahead for the most part, even with Yano's trademark tape that Yano would try to use. But he did also go into the turnbuckle a couple times, which is also another Yano special, and he tried to do the Demon Killer Powerbomb that did not connect, but again, the ace does what he always do, prevail, endured everything that Yano could throw at him, and he definitely, he stopped a low blow and a chair shot at some point, and then he finally hit the sling blade, and again, after time to adjust, he hit the high fly flow. I think a lot of people saw some of that, and just the way Tanahashi moves now. And you really can kind of tell that it was tough. You can tell that it seems very, very tough right now when it comes to what Tanahashi is doing. He's nowhere near what he used to be, even though he's still half of a lot of professional wrestlers at this stage, in my opinion. But I'm not going to act like the signs of him aging aren't there. And maybe it is time. I don't know if it's time to kick him out of the G1 yet, because I feel like Yano should be gone before we kick out Tana. But at the same time, it's definitely closer to the end than it is for Tanahashi, because he'll never be world champion again. I think at this point we all know that ship has sailed. Even though he talks a big game, and I know that's what he wants one day again, another run, there's no way he's ever going to win that title again. At least I would be really shocked. And I think it'll probably be a mistake depending on who he beats for it. But again, I still love Tanahashi, and this was still fun, even if, again, you can see that Tanahashi is slowing down. Slow your brakes, though, people. I don't think he needs to go anywhere just yet. Especially with the way New Japan do things. Like, they still, you know, Kojima, and we had Yuji Nagata not too long ago that was still in this tournament. Like, people who are way older than what Tanahashi is. Now, again, explosiveness, the way he moves, nowhere near the same. And some of those guys, like Kojima, still looks amazing and still moves pretty great. So I know what you mean, and same thing with like guys like Suzuki, of course, you know. But I don't think Tanahashi's run is over, not by a long shot. I think he still has value that he can bring to New Japan. And again, I just want to talk about this. Everybody knows Tetsuya Naito is my guy, but what a surprise it was for Shane Hayes to triumph and find a way to win. And it was a first, you know. Things were fun and games, you know. Naito didn't seem, you know, they had headwear. But again, before this match, Naito had said some things about, you know, Shane Haste and guys like Shane Haste. He didn't know why they were in the tournament. And Shane Haste came out here, seemed like on a mission to prove Naito wrong and show him why he was here. Of course, Naito targeted the neck, as he always do, trying to go after the neck breakers over the guardrail. He did do a neck breaker over the guardrail. I don't know how I forgot that. And then he also did what he always does, which is cravat, or, you know, just working on the neck, trying to set you up for Destino. But, you know, again, Hayes was able to do what he was supposed to do. He gave a lot of kicks back. He also, again, after he, just out of nowhere, because even though he fought back, Naito got Esperanza. And you just think Destino is coming. And, you know, you just knew at some point he was going to hit it. But, again, after Naito went for it, after hitting a running one, I think he went for the other one to put the icing on top. The Bomb Valley Death is what he calls that move that I was talking about earlier. It was a nice way he reversed the Destino perfectly how it worked out. Which, by the way, I think the Destino can come almost from anywhere. But at the same time, it can be reversed a lot. Now, I think about all the times over the years now, I watched Naito when he lose, get his move countered. But it was a, man, the way he hit that move was really nice. And again, he did try to pin him after the running Destino, so you got to give Shane credit. Like I said, it just made Shane look great. And the Bomb Valley Dev landed. Stunning. Like I said, very, very stunning. Was not expecting that to happen. You know, of course, Naito was the favorite coming in. And it's just that might be the upset of the tournament so far. That might come back to bite Naito. I thought Naito would find a way to get to the top. But, you know, after losing to Jeff Cobb, and I think the next two matches, I think he got three matches left. But I know he has Tana and Zach in two of the three, I believe. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be really, really tough. Speaking of Zack Sabre Jr., the main event was putting the two undefeated guys in this block against each other. Jeff Cobb versus Zack Sabre Jr. And again, Clark and Hall, very, very happy to see this match go down. And it was, you could just tell the people in there really wanted to see both of these guys do what they do best. And yeah, I think that's exactly what we got here, man. Another beautiful match from these two. You know, Zach was trying his best to come back because Cobb is just so strong. And he had a lot of moments, you know, that did, you know, the effective strikes, the neck snaps, you know, stuff like that, that always works for Zach. But, you know, he also tried a Zach driver, which, by the way, he just shouldn't have tried it because Cobb, too strong, too athletic at times in this match. And then, even though he did go for toward the islands at some point, and Zach did the counter, the same counter that let him retain his television title in Osaka. But again, Cobb kicked out this time and was able to, able to fight out of a stretch right after that, you know, right after kicking out. But with the crowd going absolutely nuts and Zach Sabre showing a lot of that pride that makes him great, and being able to hit a German suplex on Big Jeff. Even when he, at some point, I think, or not too soon, not too much after that German suplex, Cobb hit him with a German. And, again, just too much Jeff Cobb in the end with a tour of the islands. You know what that means once he hits that. It's over. Jeff Cobb is completely killing this tournament right now, undefeated, and doing, like he said, the redemption tour. This is definitely a big part of it. If he wants a TV title shot in the future, I'm sure he can get it. But I think Jeff Cobb has his eyes on something a little bit more special than that. Now, at the top of the block, alone, is Jeff Cobb at 8 points. Then you have Zack Sabre Jr. at 6 points. And then you got this log jam at 4 points with Tanahashi at four, Goto at four, Tetsuya Naito at four, Shane Haste now at four. And then you got Alex Coughlin sitting there as the only person with one win. But again, don't be surprised if Alex Coughlin surprises someone next. And that was July 26th. That is what we have. So, yeah, man, it was a really, really fantastic show with some surprising results. And, yeah, man, we have one more show to talk about, and that's from A and B Block. Here we are for Night 9. The first match of Night 9, or July 27th, will be Shota Umino versus Chase Owens. And again, you saw the young fella versus the cagey is a great way to describe Chase Owens' match in this one. It was a very, very cool match. Chase Owens had control for a bulk of the matches in this one. Of course, pushing Umino's buttons, making him make errors as, again, a veteran that you would do. You hit the C trigger, but didn't get a chance to hit the package pile driver. Because the roughneck wouldn't allow him. And at some point, he hit the Death Rider pretty much in a snap out of nowhere to get the victory over Chase Owens. There's another strong win for Shota Umino, improving his record at the moment. And again, it was a pretty cool contest, even though Chase Owens did put him into some situations. That again, like if once you understand the situation of a veteran like Chase Owens versus a guy like Shota Umino, I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was a solid way to start everything off. But man, what an unpredictable encounter this was. I think that's a great way to describe this when it comes to Gabe Kidd versus Kaito Kiyomiya. I think everyone should just go watch this segment or this match. This was incredible, man. Kaito, during his entrance, of course, got attacked just like everyone else. And just, you can tell from the beginning that Gabe Kidd was just really being aggressive, kind of picking up where he left off from in that press conference. And I can just have to say this now, Gabe Kidd is definitely top heel of the future in New Japan. If they play their cards right, he should be running Bullet Club next.
He is incredible to me. His edge is incredible. The promos have been great. The energy, the way he plays that crowd and just gets constant heat from the people in Japan, it was awesome. Again, this was a really cool performance from him. And again, I thought Kaito, again, so far, Kaito has been at his best to me. I don't know much. I don't watch it a lot of Noah. I don't get a chance to see him. But he's at his best to me when he's pissed off. So far, he's had his most impressive performances to me, other than the match with Sonata, which was just a great wrestling match. This match right here was really cool to watch, just because once he got pissed and once, he just felt like, I guess he understood that he was being kind of disrespected. But he fought back and they just went at it, man. And honestly, after a while, he hit like a drop kick out of nowhere, but then Kid retaliated, bit his head, gave him a low blow. And then again, you can just tell after that point, Kaito was sick of it and they just started to fight and they went outside. Both men could not care less about the count. That's the one thing I give it. When it comes to draws, I like this one a little bit better than what we saw from Ren and Shota towards the end, even though Ren and Shota's match probably was better. The ending of Ren and Shota, I just thought it was the disregard for the clock didn't make much sense because they were still just kind of in a wrestling match. The disregard of the clock made total sense in this situation because they were both pissed. And I just love the energy of both guys when they came back backstage. You know, obviously we're going to get more of this. We have to get more of this. I don't care if it's in NOR. I don't care if it's in, the next New Japan pay-per-view. We need more Kid versus Kaito, Kiyomiya. It was unbelievably intense. And sometimes you just need that edge, especially on some of these cards. You're waking up early in the morning for me, and you just to have a match like that to kind of pump you up and keep you going through the rest of the card was incredible to me. Another match here in A Block that we had was Yota Tsuji versus Hikuleo. And man, Tsuji actually wrestled very smart. Smarter than Ren Narita, Kevin Kelly, and Chris Charlton made sure to highlight. But at the end of the day, Hikuleo is just unbelievably too big. He's just too big. He's too big, too strong. This was Hikuleo's best performance, and I think Yota Tsuji pulled it out of it. It was very, very cool with, I liked how Tsuji was smart enough to work on the leg. He did everything that you could possibly do and probably a little bit more than what Ren Narita did to try to combat the big fella. But again, at the end of the day, he hit a knee out of nowhere when Tsuji tried to go for the spear. And that was it right there, man. He hit his power slam. Then he hit Godsend, the choke slam for the three. Incredible stuff, man. I really enjoyed it. And also, the headline match for A Block was Ren Narita versus Sonata. And again, Ren Narita has to win here in this situation. And it was a tall task because, again, we know how the veterans kind of work. And of course, Sonata's the world champion. He does not want to lose here to one of the Musketeers, and definitely in this situation. So, again, I thought this match was really, really cool. Tough match. Even though at times it did seem like they were kind of off the mark, I saw some people on Twitter mention that Sonata looked like he was a little frustrated with Ren. I don't know if it was anything Ren did. I didn't really notice anything obvious, but maybe it didn't go the way thing was meant to go. But it was still a pretty cool match to me. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was all solid stuff. Of course, Narita showing his style with the Cobra Twist and being able to throw elbows and, basically use submission and strikes the way he does. But Sonata doing what he has to do after crashing into the knees of Ren Narita on a moonsault. I thought after a while that we were probably going to get a scare there, even though I must say that's the one element that the other matches against Sonata had that Ren Narita was not able to muster. And that was a belief that he was going to beat Sonata. But either way it go, I'm not going to be hard on Ren Narita too much. I thought it was still good. And, of course, Deadfall struck. That was it. The champion is now guaranteed a place in the first in the playoffs, basically, of the way that they're going to do everything. And he already got two matches left. No one has a chance of catching Sonata right now. 10 points, undefeated so far. He has two matches left, and honestly, it does not matter what happened. Now, it does matter because someone could earn a title shot. But we could see Sonata finish with 14 points in the A block. To give you a rundown, the only person that's even close to being second place Kaito and Shota are both at 6 points. They will be close right now to Sonata, and they will be the people who possibly could also represent A Block in the little playoff round that we have going on. But I don't necessarily think either one. I mean, well, not that I don't think neither one of them can do anything to Sonata because they both lost to Sonata. Even if Sonata lose both matches and they tied at 10. Ren Narita, like I said, 2 points. He's pretty much done. Yota Tsuji, even though he's performed well, he only has 3 points. Hikuleo has 4 points. Chase Owens also has 4 points. And Gabe Kidd sits at 5. So, again, very interesting stuff from A-Block. I say seek out Kaito and Gabe Kidd. That was pretty much the best match. And also, Hikuleo and Yota Tsuji had a really cool match, the best match of Hikuleo's career so far, in my estimation. And let's get into B-Block so we can talk about the biggest match of the night. The match that kind of got headlines. But before we get there, we have to talk about Yoshihashi and Taichi. Very first match of the night. Honestly, really good strong style match. Seek this match out also from the 27th. Because they started off the night really, really strong. It reminded me of those old open weight title matches that they used to have, you know, with Makabe and, you know, some of the other strong style veterans like Ishii was having had the belt. That's what this match reminded me of. It was a really cool match, honestly. And after a while, you know, Taichi did hit Black Mephisto after they kind of traded super kicks, which was a cool little way to transition into it. This was a really, really fun match. I really enjoyed it. I had a good time with Yoshihashi and Taichi. Yoshihashi, like I said, most improved fighter in New Japan easily. And Taichi is another candidate for that spot. Really enjoyed this one. Tongaloa versus the great Okan. Again, this was a tough match. Okan dominated really a good portion of it. And I thought, honestly, that for a while there wasn't much that T could do. But, of course, T's strength is unmatched, and at least so far in this tournament it was, especially by the great Okan, who, again, is just not himself. I don't know exactly what the problem is, but, like I said, maybe we'll see something pay. Maybe something will pay this off in the end. I'm hoping that that's the case because he was not on top of his game here in this one, but in this tournament. But Tongaloa did officially eliminate him. Ape shit, one of my favorite finishes. It was great to see there. El Phantasmo versus Kenta, another match that kind of like Tama Tonga and Finley when it comes to, yes, the 2 points was there, but this was more so about revenge. You know, of course, Kenta didn't want to start with him, but ELP gave him an awesome dive out to the floor that kind of set things off. But again, Kenta would take advantage. It seemed like he got pissed that El Phantasmo brought it out brought it out of the ring and chased him. So Kenta just went bat shit on him, hit him with the kendo stick, couple DDTs under the table, you know, through the table. Yeah, man, he beat the hell out of ELP for a while, and honestly, was beating him up for a long time. Got him in the ring, finally, after beating the mess out of him for a bulk of the match. 10 seconds is the official match time, because not too soon after that, 19 seconds was the official match time. I don't know why I'm saying 10. 19 seconds was the official match time, and because of that, the beatdown didn't really count because the bell never rung. They ring the bell. Kenta goes on the attack, but he gets rolled up out of nowhere. ELP gets the points, although Kenta definitely, just like David Finley, got his heat back by taking down ELP after the fact. Definitely going to see more of that. I think that should be the feud going forward for ELP. Similar to what we're probably going to see with Tom and David Finley. Probably going to get a payoff at Wrestle Kingdom for both of those feuds. Hopefully or not. We'll see what happens. The main event. Will Ospreay finally beat Okada clean? You know, that's basically been the question. This match, like I said, got headlines. It was an 18-minute sprint. It was basically all the bells and whistles of the great Okada Ospreay matches of the past, but they found a way to do it in less than 20 minutes. Like I said, the big question was, could Ospreay finish Okada in less than 20 minutes? And yes, in this situation, he did finally find a way to do it. It was a really good match, man. Like I said, I can't really do it justice. It's just another fantastic reason to watch not only the G1, but to just watch Okada and Ospreay do what they do best. You know, again, if I went down through every move, it probably wouldn't even be doing it justice anyway, so I'm not going to go for it. But eventually, after a ripcord hidden blade, basically, which is nice, nice little twist. Again, there's always something new. You got to add a twist, kind of like with Deadfall to beat Okada. It's the same thing. You know, you add a new wrinkle to your offense to give Okada something you've never seen before, because honestly, if you just fight him like you fight everyone else, you're probably not going to win. But Ospreay hit the Stormbreaker and stunned people, but at the same time, the people really wanted Ospreay to win. Like, they were really into this match, you know, in Ota, you know. So they really wanted Ospreay to win, and they got that result. It was a very, very fantastic match. After the match, Ospreay was like, you know, this company is betting on the Three Musketeers. They don't need the Three Musketeers. They need one assassin. And basically sending shots at Sonata and all of that. And like I said, I'm very torn. You know, I want Sonata to get revenge for that broken orbital bone back when he was in LIJ. But at the same time, you know, Will Ospreay is the best wrestler in the world. You can't really be mad at that if that's the result we get, because we still got his partner who's been absolutely dominant. Jeff Cobb has been undefeated. Maybe we'll get a United Empire semifinal or something at some point, because that's just how great both guys are doing now. But again, it still got to finish strong. Both guys, Okada and Ospreay, are still tied. Let's go ahead and run through the block before I talk about who they fight next. You know, again, Okada 8 points, Ospreay 8 points, Yoshihashi at 4 points, Tongaloa at 4 points, El Fantasma got 4 points. Great Okan has 2 points, Kenta also has 4 points, and Taichi is the only other person kind of in striking distance with 6 points. So, again, we'll be talking about what's going to go on August 1st in Takamitsu. Okada faced Kenta. Got to watch out for that, because Kenta can definitely sneak up and screw Okada, and that'll be really important. Tongaloa versus Ospreay. Tongaloa's going to be up against it. We'll see what he could do against Ospreay, but, you know, Tongaloa's a big guy. Could he upset Ospreay? It's a chance. Taichi taking on ELP. Could ELP get to 6 points, or will Taichi get closer to the people at the top of the block? And then you have Yoshihashi versus the Great Okan. So, again, that's what we have going on so far in the G1. Finally, I'm caught up after them doing 3 shows in a row, but I'm happy that I had a chance to catch up, get everything ready for Sunday, and then going into August 1st, and then just we can continue on this run and keeping the G1 going strong as it is winding down. Like I said, right now we have to get C and D block to this point, but everyone in A and B block only have 2 matches left, I think. And I think the same will be the same thing will be said for C and D after Sunday. So we're moving head first into the finals of the G1, and I can't wait to see how things shake out. This next week or so is going to be very, very important for the G1 climax, and you know who's going to be on top of it all. Thank you guys for listening. This has been the breakdowns for night 7, 8, and 9. I was about to say 6, but I think it's 7, 8, and 9. So, yeah, man, thank you guys for checking this out. Thank you guys for listening to every podcast that you have been able to listen to, finding a way to keep up with me. And all the people that I've been watching New Japan with, keeping up with the G1 with in the mornings for me. Thank you guys for, you know, helping me stay entertained by agreeing or disagreeing or making jokes, you know, recommending stuff to me. Always cool to engage with you guys. So, yeah, thank you guys for checking it out. At Mind Monty Pod for any people who are not following and keeping up with us that way. If you keep not keeping up with us this way, you listen to the podcast. Thank you for being subscribed, because that's the only way I can see you seeing that I'm uploading. I appreciate that. Anyway, adios. Thank you for listening.